Malcolm Honlein is with us, Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. We call this the weekly update at JM in the AM. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Thank you. A very eventful night and day.
I sort of regret.
Just to give people a lot to talk about.
Oh, yeah. No question about that. I sort of regret dozing off early last night, frankly. I woke up to the news and couldn't believe what was going on. All right. So at least according to the majority of the news sources, and by the way, the broadcast news networks, their headline is Israel attacks Iran, when we thought it would be more appropriate, Israel retaliates against Iran. You'll tell me if that's a big deal or not. Israel did strike early Friday, according to officials from both countries, Israel and Iran, in what appeared to be its first military response to the Iranian attack on Israel last weekend. And the home to Iranian weapon facilities is Isfahan, if I have pronounced that properly. And apparently, some of what Israel hit was either in or near that area. Give us the update about what you know about Israel's activities overnight in Iran.
Well, in a remarkable display, unusual for Israel, there's really been very little leakage about information. There's clearly an attempt not to escalate. What happened in Israel, what Israel did was anticipated as one of the options, but it may have been very cleverly carried out. They did notify the United States in advance. The United States has reported that, acknowledged that they were notified just before the attack, or somewhat before the attack. The statements are pouring in from all the countries in the region, mostly just urging restraint. Oman is the first Gulf country to come out and criticize Israel, but all the others have not. Saudi Arabia, I don't think, has issued a formal statement. UAE, Jordan, others have. The real nature of the attack is unclear. There were reports that seven cities in Iran came under fire, Isfahan very prominent, and Natanz mentioned, because both of those are centers of Iran's nuclear program. And the reports also indicate that Israel may have used mini drones to carry out the simultaneous attacks. And that's why the anti-aircraft system wasn't engaged until very late, from the indications. By the way, it was also the Supreme Leader's 85th birthday. So I think this was also a gift to him, except that instead of candles on a cake, they lit up the sky with it. The fact that Israeli citizens were never given any instructions to have to shelter in place was also, I thought, significant. There is still a lot of lack of clarity, because there were strikes reported in Syria where they may have taken out radar systems or other warning systems so that they could fly. But also in Iraq, in Baghdad, there was an explosion in a building in which supposedly leading IRGC officials were meeting with some of the affiliated groups, terrorist entities. So we have Syria. Hezbollah obviously continued to fire and continues to fire, and Israel retaliates. There was an expectation that Iran would use them to escalate retaliation, but I don't think that appears to be the case as yet. The United States, everybody, in addition to calling for restraint, there's talk of another $1 billion package for Israel. S&P has downgraded Israel's long-term credit rating because of the ongoing military expenditures. But the Iran rial, which I've been reporting periodically, as you know, hit 700,000 to the dollar.
Wow.
Which is an increase from, I think last week we talked about 630,000 to the dollar. So that's a 10% drop just in the 1 week, which is in tomans 70,000 to the dollar. The economic conditions are terrible. Iranians have gone online supporting Israel. many, and messages have been heard, you know, saying that they support it in time for the regime to go. So while there's a lot of information, it does not appear that Israel hit population centers. It appears to be very targeted, from what we know, very targeted hits, which, again, raises speculation about what was fired. The Iranians were saying originally that they were fired from within Iran, the projectiles that came up, because I guess their radar systems didn't pick it up. So when you see conflicting reports, I'm telling you these details to understand why sometimes you get conflicting reports, because they can't explain exactly how some of these things took place. See retaliation, but I think the Iranians seem to be wanting to downplay it so as not to have the pressure on them to hit Israel.
Do we know if any of the nuclear facilities were at all damaged?
I do not think that they hit any of the nuclear facilities. At least none of the reports so far indicate that. That is a very big move. You also risk radiation and other things, other consequences. And the Iranians today said that we know Israel's nuclear sites. They are within our within our sites. And so the threats continue. But I'm not sure that we're going to see, again, a tit-for-tat response. I think the Iranians want this to stop. They were clearly shown to be the weaker party. Remember, Iran is 10 times the size of Israel. Its population is 10 times the size. It has a huge army and resources. We did not see the Iranian Navy, which is strong. Their Air Force is very weak. Israel may have hit the F-14 base. And remember, the Iranians struck at Israel's Air Force base in the south. So this may have been a strike at their Air Force, but their F-15 planes, which date back to the days of the Shah, and their Air Force is very weak. That's why you never see Iranian planes utilized in the attacks on Israel. So right now, I would say that the nuclear sites were not hit. The message was given that we can reach them, and we will reach them if Iran continues its current trajectory.
Last weekend, the New York Times did a whole analysis of the capabilities of Iran, and they spoke about the incredible stockpile of ballistic missiles and the killer drones and some of the similar things that were used last weekend against Israel. And they mentioned what you said about the Air Force and its weakness. I didn't realize there was strength in the Navy. What about the military in general, the regular ground military of Iran? Is it regarded as strong or not?
It's not regarded as highly modernized. They are creative. And a lot, as I said, of the emphasis was on the Navy, where they created these mini submarines, right, and right, have put emphasis. The IRGC has its own Navy and Army, as we've seen it. And it is the IRGC, not the conventional Army, that has been carrying out the attacks on Israel and some of the responses. I think there'll be a lot of review. I'm not sure all the heads will still be on their shoulders when this is over in Iran. But the Navy has been the source of their pride. And they, you know, remember the attacks on ongoing attacks on the ships. The IRGC took the last ship that was confiscated in the Red Sea, was done by the IRGC, not by the Houthis acting on their behalf. So the Navy carries out a lot of the escalation, but the traditional Army, I don't see it as much as a direct threat. The nuclear program is clearly the biggest escalation.
And we got to go back for a minute to what happened. But there's a lot that's happened since the last time we spoke. And, of course, we know what our brothers and sisters in Israel went through last Saturday night and early Sunday. So the defense weapons, do we call it that, the defense mechanisms that have been described or named in news reports, many of them familiar to us, of course, Iron Dome, David Sling, the Arrow 2 and 3 has been noted, at least it was last weekend in the news in that regard. And then I heard of one called Iron Beam. Is there one called Iron Beam, or was that a typo?
No, Iron Beam is the Navy-based on the SAR corvettes that Israel has. This is like the waterborne Iron Dome. And it was used to bring down one of the launches from Yemen, from the Houthis. And it's the second time that it's actually been employed and successfully achieved its goal.
So my point being that it's amazing that Israel has all these defense mechanisms. It is amazing to have experience, at least if you're one of our brothers or sisters in Israel, the benefits of them, because the hit rate last Saturday night, Sunday, I don't have to tell you, was minuscule and literally a miracle. And those of us, of course, who are faith-based, we understand why Israel, thank God, is in this position. But could you address for us for a moment, the incredible track record in terms of defense that happened over and in the state of Israel last weekend?
I think the biggest defense mechanism was the Holy One, blessed be He, because a lot of this defies normal explanation. And when you think of this tiny little country of 10 million people, I mean, New Jersey, Connecticut.
Only 75 years old.
And leading the world in deployment. You can be sure there are going to be a lot of orders coming in to Israel for a lot of the technology and a lot of these items. Arrow 3, very successful, and it takes out at a higher altitude. And you have to look at the travel routes, because these missiles have to fly over either Saudi or Iraqi or
Jordan,
go up to Red Sea. There are various, Jordan for sure, right? Both the attack, but also Israel's response yesterday had to go out, and that's why I think they took out the Syrian radar systems, and of course they're constantly taking out Iran attempts to rearm and send in more modern equipment. Iran has, it's estimated, 3,000 ballistic missiles ready to shoot. So it's not something to be dismissed and to be diminished, the power that Iran could have to wreak havoc, in addition to the fact that they have sleeper cells here in the United States, in Europe, around the world, that could be activated. And they, of course, have the ring of fire proxies, from the Houthis to the Iraqi and Syrian militias, Hezbollah, Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, etc., and have in South America invested a lot in building up their capacities together with based in Venezuela, but also in other countries where they can do damage to the United States from very close by. So, one has to look at the total picture. And in that context, I think Iranian weakness has been exposed. And you see that a lot of the Iranian people came out with tweets and Twitters in support of Israel. There was even people who posted signs on bridges and other places saying, "We stand with Israel," which is a very courageous thing to do in Iran.
One other thing is obvious. I mean, at least Saudi Arabia and Jordan, maybe others as well at this point, you could tell us, they get what we keep preaching regarding Hamas, that, after Israel, the U.S. or the West or whoever you want to put in that blank is next. And it's so obvious now that based on their behavior, that Saudi Arabia and Jordan at least get the fact that if Iran is able, God forbid, to do anything to infiltrate Israel in any significant way, that they're going to be next. As simple as that. This, everything you've been telling us for the last 20 years about the Iranian desire to simply take over the entire Middle East, it's just becoming more and more apparent that other countries aside from Israel understand that now.
And that they are targeting the GCC countries, the Gulf Cooperation countries, feel it, recognize it, and pray for Israel's success. And regardless if there are condemnations or not, that's not what we hear from people. The concern that they have is only, internal disruptions by radicalized populations in those countries as well. And the general feeling is that in Iran, that is not the case, that the overwhelming support would go against the regime, that they're tired of, they want Khamenei, who's 85 years old yesterday, to step down. They're tired of the restrictions, and that's why I keep reporting the economic developments, because that's what impacts people most directly and can feed the dissension and ultimately perhaps the overthrow of the regime. They're getting support from Russia. Russia did call for restraint, but China and Russia obviously have linked themselves with Iran, or Iran with them. We'll have to see how that translates further, whether there'll be Security Council actions, whatever. Yesterday, as you know, there was an attempt to move it in the Security Council with an overwhelming vote. Only UK and one other country came out against it, but the United States vetoed the attempt to recognize a Palestinian state.
Yeah, the reward for killing 1,200 Jews. This is the reward.
Exactly the point. And it would then have to go to the General Assembly, but because the U.S. vetoed it, it doesn't move anymore. But you're right. This obviously would be perceived by and presented by Hamas as a victory for them. They did fire missiles during the night against Ashkelon from Gaza again, which is always remarkable. People have to understand, you don't need big launch bases. You simply set up a tripod, put the launcher on it, and shoot. And we know that they still have capacity, which is why Israel has to be allowed to finish the job. They hit in Hezbollah. They hit in Gaza lands over the night, and still many, many targets left both in Gaza, and why the Rafah action remains a priority, and in maintaining the status quo with Hezbollah, that it not escalate further. But the constant barrage, it comes a point where Israel could not tolerate it anymore. 80,000 people displaced, and we have to remember them the Seder. They're not in their homes. They're not able to celebrate fully. Still a large percentage of people in the South who are not home, and how many are missing a loved one this Chag, and or have those who have been severely wounded and are in hospitals or rehabilitating.
America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio. Around the world, the web at NahumSiegel.com, on the Nahum Siegel Network, and of course on the beloved NSN app. Malcolm Homeline, Conference of Presidents, major American Jewish organizations. Unfortunately, there was one successful, I mean, I don't want to, I hate using that word, but you'll know what I mean, attack against Israel this week, and that was the drone attack that wounded 18 people, one critically up north as that rocket hit northern Israel. Why was that, in fact, successful? Was there a breakdown in Israel's defense system? And you mentioned the tens of thousands up north that are going to continue to be displaced, including for the upcoming holiday. Are they given updates by the Army, or are they given any type of timetable that would give them hope that they're actually going to return home after more than half a year?
They have not been given a timetable, as far as I know. Israel wants to see the rehabilitation. And the immense burden of the, quote, day after, unquote, meaning what you have to do in the South, it will require billions of dollars. Remember, a lot of homes have been destroyed or damaged by these assaults. We don't read about it because there aren't human casualties in most instances, but the homes are being damaged. They're shooting these anti-tank rockets, which fly at a low level and therefore aren't intercepted by Iron Dome or other defense systems, but they are hitting homes. They're doing damage. And, you know, Israel's air defense is not, no system can be 100% effective. And here you had a drone that was part of a swarm that came in, or a number of drones, and one got through, and the picture has been widely seen, and four people were seriously wounded, 14 hurt. So it does happen, and especially when you have these low-flying anti-tank missiles. Iran, Hezbollah fires almost every day. Israel hits back every day. They try to take out the launch sites, to try to hit back in the places from which the rockets are being fired. But again, I think it's still being contained at a pretty serious level, but still being contained.
No imminent hostage deal, right? Nothing different than a week ago.
Unfortunately, the Hamas has walked away from it. I think that they feel that they're, until Qatar throws out the leadership, makes them subject to arrest or to capture, and until you know, Sinwar is caught. We see the continuing firing. We see the deals being rejected. Then speculation about how many are alive, not alive, is not helpful, but it's obviously relevant. And people think that perhaps that's why they don't want to make a deal. They don't want to have to reveal the fact that they don't have them. They claim that they can't find them until there's a ceasefire, and then they want huge numbers of released murderers. They want people with life sentences, meaning that they killed Israelis, and Israel was willing to pay a very significant price to get people back. The government is not indifferent to the plight of the hostages, but there are deals that are just not acceptable. And the idea that you would think this would be in three stages, each one, I think, 42 days, which means that Hamas would have had enough time to rebuild, to reorder their forces, who are now spread out, and Israel's actions have really broken a lot of the units. And we know the four divisions, though they're not full divisions in Rafah, but the fact that they can still fire from the north and periodically from the south says that they still have some presence and capacity that has to be rooted out over time. And that's why Israel said it will take a year to really clean it out and to be able to get all of those forces. But if, and you see the increased amount of aid, so much so that the trucks are backed up because the UNRWA and the others can't unload them fast enough. And yet they still can say that there's famine. Look at the pictures and look at the reality.
Is there Israel's presence in Rafah that you just described, does that violate the instructions from Washington?
No, Israel, what I think Washington doesn't want is a big ground invasion. Egypt has also warned about it. I think what Israel more likely will do is targeted hits like they did in the last week. And when they find out that the Hamas leaders are in certain places, that they remove that particular place. It's one of the reasons why I think these pictures, the daily pictures, are not wise, because the impression that one gets when a bomb is dropped and you have a big cloud, the cloud is just the dust that comes up, and it's often a single building or even part of a building that is targeted, and that the, you know, where they're going over particular leaders. But there is unanimity that Rafah has to be addressed. Unanimity in the Israeli government, that is, right. Rafah has to be addressed, that you cannot allow that situation to continue, because as long as they can walk out of it and regroup or come out holding Palestinian flags, holding demonstration with Sinwar at the lead, they will claim a victory on October 7th.
All right, we got to get to Colombia, but first, look, the Seder's Monday night. We know what happened, unfortunately, the last time we had a high-profile holiday on our calendar. Do you anticipate retaliation against the retaliation that Iran just felt from Israel?
I think they're not. I think they're playing it down, and so as not to retaliate and not to escalate. Iran knows that as much as they threaten and make these boisterous claims, Israel demonstrated its real capacity to do it and to bring the message very close to home. So I'm not sure that we're going to see an escalation. They can still use their proxies to carry out Iran attacks. And one should remember also the Park Hotel,
sure,
that's at the Seder and the heavy toll. So they're not adverse to attacking on Yom Tov.
No question. Everyone's got to be on guard. And that goes for everybody listening around the world, not just in Israel. All right. Before we'll finish with Colombia. But one last thing on this. I get confused because when you're getting certain news from social media, you can't keep track of what date it comes from. Is there now a $5.2 billion bill for defensive weapons for Israel in the Senate? Is that what's happening right now?
Yes, there's a bill, but the total amount may actually be much larger. And the House moved to separate, you know, the Ukraine aid, the Israel aid, the others, the Senate lumps them together. So I'm hopeful that they can still work it out. There was pressure to include money for the, you know, defense on the American southern border.
Are the senators that we would expect to help move this along, in fact, helping to move this along?
Yes. And there is general support. There is a lot of opposition to support for the Ukrainian package, then people wanted to be alone, not a direct grant or other objections that are being raised. Israel as a standalone would probably pass. There is a $1 billion arms sale that the administration has said they're considering right now. Remember that Israel used a lot of its ordinances in the fight with Hezbollah and the answering of the Iranian attack. Right. So, you know, they don't have unlimited supply of Iron Dome missiles, and there is not an unlimited supply in the world. And Israel, as the primary user, you know, has to rely on shipments from the United States of this stuff. So I know people are very quick to make certain judgments and things, but they have to realize how dependent Israel is and how important the supplies and the continued assistance is to Israel's ability to defend itself.
All right, we got to do Colombia a little bit quickly. I need your impressions of the testimony in Washington and what you thought of that entire session. Then, of course, please address what's happening on the campus and especially the arrest of certain high-profile people that are taking part in the pro-Palestinian demonstrations at Columbia University.
Oh, you mean Ilhan Omar's daughter getting arrested, which was wonderful. Look, I think the president of Columbia probably studied the testimony and watched the video a couple hundred times of her colleagues who appeared in the Senate and the price that they paid, two of them already removed, that I think her responses were cautious, not fully satisfactory, but more importantly is what happens on the campus. And for the first time, police acted during the night against the people who were sitting. There were about 100 arrests, the last that I'd heard. And the situation in Colombia has become intolerable. And the fact that Jewish students live in fear and that other students talk about the unsafe environment that exists there, I think that the president's inability to answer some of the questions and that the Congress members were well prepared talking about what is actually going on the campus. We've heard from students what happens in the class. They focused on Professor Massoud, but he's only one of many. And I think the actions against Columbia, the demands that are being made, the university is showing a little bit of a tougher stance. We'll have to see if it's sustained and what the reactions. I'm sure we're going to see sit-ins and other actions by these radical students. In there, it can't be about Israel because many of them have no clue what they're sitting in. Is this against America? This is a rejection of all the values we hold dear. It's identification with the terrorists and murderers of the worst kind. And as you said, you know, that when they talk about October 7th and the way that they do and talk about the Zionist state and Zionist entity and attack their fellow students, it's not just a complaint about the IDF or whatever. So one has to realize what is the real intention and remind people that this is undermining fundamental American values, America's future, and that it's going on campuses across the country. We have many more lawsuits coming against universities because students feel unsafe. And even with the physical assaults, and thank God people are critical of Senator Cotton for saying that they should just get out of the cars and remove the people who are blocking bridges and main arteries and ambulances and all of that. And you see people are doing it. They're fed up with this and the tolerance of it. There are areas where people can go and demonstrate. Free speech allows them to do it. But the fact that they can block major arteries and are allowed to do this, it only incites them to do it more often.
No question.
Columbia is a front line. And how many years did we warn about what was going on in Columbia and NYU and being in New York? Work, let alone in more isolated places where students feel endangered.
Yeah, I was just going to say the Ivy League is always the front line, and New York, of course, ramps that up even further. If you're wondering historically why Columbia is always such a hotbed for these types of activities. Our next weekly update, please God, May the 3rd, 2 weeks from today. I take this opportunity, wish you a Chag Kosher V'Sameach. It is the holiday of redemption, Malcolm. It is the holiday of nationhood. I hope rabbis tomorrow use the opportunity to speak about the national message as opposed to some of the minutia that they often concentrate on, which I'm not minimizing. I get it. Halachic minutia is critical to our existence. I'm not minimizing that. But I think when you have an opportunity once a year to on Erev Pesach to talk about an important topic to our community, I would hope that it would be about nationhood and the eventual destiny of the Jewish people. Meanwhile, I thank you for everything you do here and wish you a Chag Kosher V'Sameach.
Remember the miracles that we focus on the tzaras, but think of the miracles we're seeing every day, every life that is saved, and the fact that Israel can survive the onslaught of these huge countries, as I said, Iran, 10 times its size, and come out victorious. This is something we should not take for granted. It's for all of us. This is a war about our future, and every paragraph of the Haggadah has a message. Not just b'chol dar v'dar omdim aleinu, but the explication of it to remind us that the messages of the Haggadah are as relevant today as they were at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim.
100%. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful Shabbos and a great Chag. Malcolm Honlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, Friday's weekly update. Bezrat Hashem, our next weekly update, 2 weeks from today, on the 3rd of May, here at JM in the AM.